Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are collectively the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in and around New York City. And this show aims to bring the culture to horticulture.
So happy summer, everybody.
Yes, it's been so long since we've been in the studio. It's really, really good to be here.
And the weather finally broke, and it's gorgeous here in New York.
Yeah, we're really grateful
for that. The humidity stopped.
Yeah. I think today would have been a good beach day.
Oh, yeah. We're halfway out there.
Who needs a bathing suit? So Alice and I, with our team, have been making gardens like mad this spring. I don't think we've designed and built more gardens in a season than this year, right?
I feel like we stuffed plants instead of planting plants. We just went crazy.
Everybody's had like a horrible, long, cold and wet winter.
So much death in the garden.
So much death. It was like mythic.
Yeah. You know? I was weeping.
Anyway, everybody was aching to get back out there and work on their outdoor spaces. But private gardens are not the only spaces that have seen a big renewal this year. A brand new garden area has been developed and built at one of our favorite places, the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And it's kind of rare that something of this size and scale is built from scratch in New York. You know, New Yorkers don't dedicate that much space to outdoor public spaces anymore.
Right.
You know, it's unusual.
And this is the children's garden.
No, it's the Discovery Garden. Discovery Garden. And I was so intrigued by this kind of from the ground up new public space that I decided to become a garden docent to kind of learn about it and help visitors engage with it. Because even though Alice and I deal with, you know, people and their gardens all the time, it's individuals. You know, and it's very, very like
homeowners.
Right. And so this was a very different thing. So it was in that capacity that I met our two guests today, Mira Jagroop and Ashley Gammel, who have both taught me so much about how to engage with garden visitors and, you know, kind of help me share my passion for plants and nature with a sort of broader group of people. So, Alice, you want to introduce our guests?
Yeah,
let me give a little bio information.
Ashley Gammel is the manager of the Discovery Garden and Family Programs at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. She's been working at BBG since 2006, where she worked in the worlds of education, horticulture, and exhibit development. She curated BBG's historic children's garden and former Discovery Garden and has been working on the development of the new Discovery Garden since 2009. Her background is in environmental science and writing, and she's contributed to several of BBG's amazing books, including the most recent Kids Guide to Exploring Nature.
Love that book.
And Mira Jagroop is the Discovery Garden coordinator. She joined the Discovery Garden staff just a few months ago during February 2015, and she's no stranger to BBG nor the Discovery Garden project. She began at BBG as a children's garden instructor in 2012, and she contributed to the development of the exhibits and programming for the new Discovery Garden as an interpretation intern and graduate researcher. She recently completed her thesis at the Bank Street College, which explores how BBG's new Discovery Garden can support school groups' science learning in the garden. So, ladies, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
So, let's start with Ashley. I'm going to ask you a question. Tell us a bit about what the motivation was behind rebuilding and expanding the original Discovery Garden, and how long did this whole process take? you know, and kind of want to get a sense of the vision of the space.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been in the pipeline for quite a long time. The new Discovery Garden is a result of kind of a bigger strategic planning initiative that includes a really big capital campaign. A lot of our visitors have noticed lots of wonderful changes in the garden, like the new visitor center, the new herb garden, the expansion on the native flora garden, and then this most recent chunk of the capital campaign was really turning our attention to that south corner of the garden where the Flatbush entrance is,
right,
and really beautifying that space so that it really feels as lush and enveloping and immersive a landscape as our other entrances in the rest of the garden. So that includes our beautiful new entry building and this kind of gorgeously landscaped entrance garden as you come in from Flatbush Avenue there, and this much expanded and enhanced beautiful new Discovery Garden. And, you know, BBG has a really strong commitment to children's education. We created the first children's garden of its kind, our historic children's garden where we grow veggies 100 years ago last
exactly.
year. So this is kind of just part of our ongoing dedication to really getting kids to do learning by doing, which is a big part of our mission, and just creating a bigger garden with a much bigger capacity, because our old Discovery Garden was so loved that we just couldn't really contain all of our visitors in a comfortable, engaging kind of way.
Right.
Yeah. This is, about an acre? Or how large?
It's an acre. It's about quadruple the size of the former garden.
Yeah.
So we've grown a lot, and it's just amazing to see how many people are in there every day discovering and just the capacity of the garden and how it feels comfortable for adults and a huge age range. Our goal is to have a garden that's engaging for 1 to 12-year-olds rather than just early childhood like the older space. And I think it's so far proving to really kind of reach those audiences.
So the older space, what year was that developed? Like, was it like a 60s or 70s design?
You know, that's really funny that you say that, because it really kind of felt 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
But it was actually built in 1996.
Oh my God, the 90s.
It was part of a partnership with the Brooklyn Children's Museum.
Right.
But it did kind of have a little bit of a vintage yeah. to it.
It had that rustic kind of feel, yeah.
This one's very different. And you know, Alice and I are garden designers, and we see things through that lens, you know. Uh-huh. So when I go there, I, like, focus and zone in on that stuff. And you guys did an amazing job. And then we're really curious about that. Maybe, Mira, you can touch on this a little bit. Were you involved in the process with the designers, about, you know, with the design team as educators, you know, to kind of include all of the components that you wanted?
Hi. So I, as you know, I joined the team fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to work on that a little bit. One thing I did as an interpretation intern, I worked really closely with Ashley and the education department here, and we created mock-up exhibits out of cardboard and hamster tubes and foam and anything we could get our hands on. And we just went out into the garden and worked with families and had them interact with these kind of paper exhibits, and we interviewed them and kind of found out what stuff worked, what didn't work, and then we got to chat with the designers about our findings for the exhibits. So it was really collaborative.
Uh-huh.
And in terms of the landscape design, I'll probably let Ashley speak more about that.
Yes, Ashley, tell us about that process.
How did you choose Michael Van Valkenburg over other designers?
I wasn't involved personally in the decision, but I do know that when we brought them on board, that was right around the time that the beginnings of Brooklyn Bridge Park opened up.
Right.
And I think that project, so many New Yorkers fell in love with that. So
right.
I was really excited to have them come on board. And yeah, I think As far as the collaboration on the landscape design, you know, we worked with a separate firm on the exhibits, but we worked really closely with MVVA on the landscape. And it was really neat. It was really a multi-year process with tons of collaborators. We had a really big planning team here at BBG, including lots of stakeholders across education, horticulture, science, all of our departments. And I think it was kind of maybe challenging because I think we were really picky clients. We kind of already had this really beloved discovery garden that a lot of our visitors were upset to see go. So the bar was really high.
Right.
We needed to create something that was so awe-inspiring that it would, you know, it would really justify kind of closing this beloved space to create something that was so much more immersive and interactive and lush and inspiring.
Right, because what you do now is going to set the tone for the next 100 years of children's programming and education.
It's very different.
Tell us, like, did you guys have listening sessions with the community and to find out, you know, kind of what they wanted as well?
Absolutely, yeah. We did a lot of evaluation. We had a focus group. We did lots of surveys kind of over the years because this project took so long. We had many years to kind of observe how the old space worked, what new opportunities we wanted to build on, and interview and survey a lot. So we definitely did listen. You'll notice that there are a lot of similarities in the new Discovery Garden. One of the things we heard from families is that you can't take away that water pump. There is a kind of old-fashioned hand pump in the old Discovery Garden that kids loved. So things like that we made sure carried over. And then we listened to a lot of city parents saying, my kids just need a place to dig in the dirt that's safe. So we have a dig zone in the garden that is just a big patch of dirt that kids can hang out and dig in. And actually, one of my colleagues was walking through the garden. She heard a kid in the dig zone say, this is the best day of my life.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's really exciting to hear.
Yeah.
Well, you know, for folks who haven't been there, maybe Mira, you can walk us through all the different environments and, you know, because there's sort of discrete like ecosystems and environments in the garden and sort of like how they relate to one another so people can kind of visualize it.
Sure. So it's a 1-acre garden, as you know, so it's quite large. It's really long and narrow. And there are kind of 5 main environments. It starts, if you come in the front entrance, a Four Seasons garden, which has many plantings that kind of bloom all year round. It's for looking closely and getting kids to use their senses with the plants. The Discovery Garden is one of the only places in the entire larger garden that visitors can touch plants. So we almost require that people touch plants when they visit the Discovery Garden. So there's lots of great flowers and things to see in the Four Seasons, which leads right into the Fruit and Vegetable Garden, which has a bunch of raised vegetable beds, fruit trees, fruit shrubs, blueberries, currants. It also has a dig zone where kids can dig in the dirt and just explore, get their hands dirty. We also had kids plant the first vegetables in the Discovery Garden, which was really fun. And we also have an insect hotel, which is an art piece, but also a functional piece, where we've collected, we had an artist collect materials from all over BBG and organize them so that insects will actually want to come live inside and hopefully pollinate our vegetable garden. And the next 3 environments are hopefully mimicking kind of being out in the wild, but also in kind of a contained, safe space. All of the plantings, or most of the plantings in the next 3 are native plants. So we have our marsh, which is a small pond surrounded by native plantings. Kids can clamber down to the marsh, or they can go over a kind of deck and reach over and dip for critters and explore the plants. And it leads right into the meadow, which the water pump is located, surrounded by, you can imagine just wildflowers and grasses towering over you if you're 3 or 4 years old. Hopefully they'll keep growing in. And because they're native plants, they attract a lot of native wildlife as well. So we've been seeing a ton of bees, butterflies, dragonflies all over the Discovery Garden. And it's kind of all these windy paths that you're going through in the meadow with lots of flowers and sounds. And that leads right into our woodland, which is kind of the biggest habitat in the Discovery Garden. The main part of it's a large tree platform, and it's shaded by these large trees, including a honey locust tree, or actually, it's a black locust tree. Black locust tree, which is really great because a lot of the wood in the Discovery Garden is all black locust. So mm-hmm. It's kind of nice to see the tree and then what we can make out of the wood from the tree.
That's like the new sustainable wood. Black locust.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. We've used it to build structures
instead
in the garden.
Instead of eBay.
It's local.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's right. I think, Ashley, you can correct me, but a lot of it's from Ithaca, New York, all of the wood for the Discovery Garden, at least the black locust. And there's a giant bird's nest that kids can go in, and most of our exhibit tables are also in the woodland, so there's just so much to do, whether you want to explore or do a hands-on science activity in the Discovery Garden.
That's awesome. Ashley, you were at Bank Street, right? Or was
that was Mira.
Mira. So you were at Bank Street. What that must have been interesting for Bank Street to kind of get into the public garden realm of education design, right? Like, I'm sure they don't get too many people doing botanic garden work, right, in their education program?
Yeah, I mean, I was in their museum education program, and a lot of the focus is on art,
right.
Art museums, and, you know, children's museums, but it was really great to work with the garden and kind of take some of the information and some of the techniques they use in art and science museums and kind of use them towards the exhibits and the programs for the new Discovery Garden.
Yeah. Were you guys at all concerned in the design of it with kind of Brooklyn history and early Brooklyn landscape?
Well, as Mira mentioned, a lot of the landscapes are really based on local ecosystems.
Uh-huh.
So in that sense, it is kind of a mini Manhattan in a way.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking of when you were talking about the native plants. Can you name some of them?
Sure. So I had a lot of fun working with Michael Van Valkenburg in our horticulture department on plant selection.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite plants that's in there is sweet fern, the lovely Comptonia, which is one of my favorite hiking companions. Really fragrant, feathery looking shrub. It looks like a fern, but it's actually a shrub. So there's some stands of that. There are tons of ephemeral woodland wildflowers like Jack in the Pulpit and what else? Spring Beauty. Let's see. We actually, as far as plant selection, I'm thinking about the process. A lot of what we selected because it has really interesting, funky stories we can tell about it. So in the marsh, for instance, we made sure there's skunk cabbage because skunk cabbage has this amazing adaptation where it heats up and melts the snow around it in early spring. And it also actually is what bears use to jumpstart their digestive system after being a little constipated from the winter.
I didn't know that.
I just learned.
A lot of the natives we picked because they have fun stories to tell that.
Right.
Well, we can certainly relate to that, Ashley, because that's what Alice and I basically do.
Because some of our clients are the bears, and they need to be.
I should plant some skunk cabbage. I can think of several people that can use it. I don't know if humans can consume it, but we'll have to research that. I personally love the clethra. There was quite a bit of that in the garden, and I noticed there's some magnolia planted too, which I was excited about. And I know it's not a New York native, but it was really nice. I got the sense, Ashley, that y'all weren't like super rigid about the native discussion. Do you know what I mean? I felt like there was flexibility there.
We definitely tried to be flexible where like maybe 90% of the plants in the garden are native. So we do have the Magnolia virginiana, the native one, and then we also have southern magnolia just because we're really looking for sensory interest for kids.
Right.
And those leathery, velvety leaves that stay over winter are just so rad that it just felt worth it to us to kind of bend the rules a little. So we were flexible in that way.
Yeah, and you are a botanic garden, first and foremost, you know? Like, it's not a native garden. I mean, yes, there are native aspects to it, but you have a responsibility to show all kinds of different plants and environments. So,
absolutely.
So what was one challenge like that you, where you had to sort of, you know, design versus education, and who won? I'm putting you on the spot.
Oh, that's a really good question.
Because there's always compromises, you know, like it's, and especially working with such a big firm that definitely has
design parameters.
Egos, you know, like these people that do amazing work, you know. So where, you know,
absolutely. I think you kind of touched on one about being a botanic garden. And you notice in the rest of the garden that we're kind of all about, you know, we're collectors in a botanic garden.
Yes,
we're
right.
all about creating a collection of as many different types of plants from all around the world as we can, and trying to have every species of magnolia and every cultivar of magnolia that we possibly had. So I think we came to Michael Van Valkenburg with an idea that the plant collection in that space would kind of mirror what we have in the rest of the garden in that sense. And I think they kind of had to bring us around to a compromise where they are very much interested in the aesthetics of the landscape, and they planting, you know, there's maybe 30 beech trees throughout the woodland, whereas maybe we had come to them and said, well, can't we have this species of beech tree and this, you know, we want American beech, we want European beech, we want every funky kind of beech cultivar you can hunt down because of our interest in collection. So I feel like that was an area where we had to compromise, and I think we did wind up with a garden that feels really rich in terms of the range of plants that we have. But also really aesthetically looks beautiful and ties together with some really big, gorgeous mass plantings.
That is a good example of that, you know, compromise. Alice and I have to do this on a small scale because some clients want to do mini high lines and mini botanic gardens, you know, and they're like, no, your garden is not going to be a mini botanic garden, you know? Like,
yeah. In fact, we're working on a project right now in Brooklyn Heights. And the woman said, you know, she sent me all these beautiful pictures of Pete Odoff, right? And his big meadows. And I was like, yes, these are great. And we have already specified some of these plants, but your beds are 16 inches wide. You will not get this 20 foot wide look, you know?
No, it's a very different. Well, we have to take a break. Ladies, stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute. We'll keep talking about the Discovery Garden at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden.
Thanks.
You're listening to Pale Blue by The Landing.
Has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Erica White, host of Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Alice and I have two amazing guests today, Ashley Gammel and Mira Jagroop, who together are responsible for the programming and management of the brand new Discovery Garden at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. Here's what Ann Raver of the New York Times had to say about the Discovery Garden in a recent review. Children's gardens often have the unfortunate dumbing down of nature quality. Giant neon caterpillars, cutesy mushroom houses, but there is no such condescension at the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens' new Discovery Garden, which opened last Saturday. The garden designed by Michael von Valkenburg Associates is geared towards immersing children in nature, but this meandering acre is for grown-ups too. They could be seen last week rolling down a steep grassy hill or peering into the bark of a century-old cork tree to see if they could spy any insects crawling out of one of the burrows. And I think that really is a great, in a short synaptic kind of way, describes the garden, because that's what I thought of it. And my experience as a docent was the adults are just as into it, you know.
Yeah. I love that Anne mentioned that.
Yes.
In her.
Yeah. So you had said, I'm going to turn to Ashley for this. You had said that, you know, ages 1 through 12, but the adults really are into it.
It's just 1 through 50.
It's like 1 through 100. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Was this something that you all expected when you were working on it, or is this kind of like a surprise?
Well, we definitely were gearing towards that 1 to 12-year-old age range. And as we know, those 12-year-olds are not going to feel welcome in a space that feels like it's being, as she said, dumbed down, that feels super bright and garish and kind of childish. So we did really make an effort to make sure this is a space that did make adults feel welcome and comfortable wandering in. In the old garden, we heard a lot of people kind of walk by and say, that space isn't for me, because especially of some of the primary colors in the exhibit that signaled an early childhood space. So we really just wanted universal design, you know, and when you're designing for kids, that usually does really work well for everyone, because adults love hands-on fun experiences too.
Right.
That kind of was our intent, especially in the color palette of the exhibit, in the scale of the exhibit, maintaining some little teeny winding paths that feel exciting for a 3 or 4-year-old, but also some kind of bigger gathering spaces that feel comfortable for a group of adults to sit and kind of soak in the sun. And I've seen a lot of adults come through and say, hey, this is my favorite part of the garden. And that's just so wonderful and inspiring to me.
Well, it sounds like also that's what von Valkenburg brought to the table, is that kind of level of sophistication and an experience in space. Because,
absolutely.
I mean, the Brooklyn Bridge Park is so amazing. And it is, everybody feels comfortable there. So to replicate that with an education
Component
just, you know, is all, like, all the better.
Mm-hmm.
And it does feel serene. There are definitely places. And one of the things I noticed and I experienced that was really fun is BBG has a lot of international visitors. A lot of people don't think about that, but it is a tourist destination. And one of the things that was really exciting about interacting with the visitors was talking with people about plants. You know, for them, it's not just like New Yorkers and these are native plants. These are, for some visitors, these plants, they're totally unfamiliar with. Something like a maple,
right?
You know, or something that we kind of, so common, a London plane, a maple, something super common to us. A visitor from Brazil, it's so exciting for them. You know, they had as many questions as their kids, you know, and that was really amazing. And to share, you know, they would tell me about their plants and their kind of like native plants. And,
right.
You know, it was just a really great.
So let's talk about signage then.
Yes,
because right? There's a lot more signage in the Discovery Garden than in other parts of the garden. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So we have a lot of signage around the entire Discovery Garden. We have consoles kind of looking into the plant beds, and a lot of the consoles and the signage are a little bit interactive. So there might be an abacus on one of the signs where visitors can count the number of flowers that bees are visiting and what colors of flowers, and there's a lot of flips. So a lot of science questions on one side of a flip, and they flip it open for the answer. Also, we have some specimens attached to some of our signage. So we have a hornet's nest attached to one of the signs in the Discovery Garden as well. And then we also have these kind of larger signs that kind of signal when you're going into a different habitat within the Discovery Garden. And we have our beautiful watercolor signs painted by Adele.
Adele Rossetti. Yeah, I know her. Yeah.
One of the watercolor teachers here at BBG.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the signage, like you said, is not, you know, primary colors. It doesn't, it feels very artful. And I want
it feels museum-ish.
Yes, exactly. Know? And I also love that, as from what I recall, and correct me if I'm wrong, either of you gals, there's no digital, there's no buttons, right? There's no digital aspect to it at all, right?
Yeah, that was a conscious decision that we made and also reinforced by our focus group of parents and teachers, that we wanted this space to be low tech and to be about going back to the kinds of nature play that maybe some of us grew up with, you know, having fun with sticks. One of our exhibits, you know, the exhibit material that you use is sticks, and you're just weaving and building a bird's nest. And it's really cool to see city kids who are maybe used to being on their parents' iPads a lot of the time get so excited about picking up and moving sticks around and kind of dialing back a little bit. So the exhibits are, they're not digital. We did play with some really kind of old school museum exhibit techniques. Like we have holograms or lenticulars that show you plants moving. You can look at a stomata on the underside of a leaf, and if you move your head this way and that, you can see the stomata opening and closing and kind of imagine what it's like for a plant to breathe. And we have a couple of different science tools throughout the garden that are all, kind of low tech in that way.
Yeah, it was great to see that. It was great to really be pure about it, I felt.
Yeah, and to not jump on that bandwagon of like tech, and everybody gets an iPad when they walk through the garden, and you know, like, or even the audio stuff, like, I don't know. I never do the audio stuff because then I focus too much on what people are saying versus just looking, you know, when I go to an art museum. It is nice to have the information, but you can look that up later, you know.
I kind of want it's kind of like getting, you know, the whole synopsis and a preview and reviews of a movie. Do you want to read the reviews or do you want to just seat yourself and then read the reviews later and sort of compare? And I love that you all, you have the signage, you have information, but it doesn't feel ever overwhelming. It really feels like, you know, people do get immersed in it. And I do find that even really young children stay and linger in spots for quite a while. Don't you guys think that? They do remain engaged.
Absolutely.
You know, they're not just like flitting from place to place. Like they really do get focused and into it.
Like they would on a screen.
And just as you guys are talking about learning to look in an art museum rather than have someone kind of tell you what to think about a piece of art, that's kind of how we were thinking about inviting kids into this space and having it be a space where we train them to look in nature and feel and smell, because not everyone walks into a garden and just kind of knows how to appreciate, how to engage, how to kind of look closely at a plant and start noticing its qualities, because plants are not that central in many of our lives. So we try to create interpretation that invites you to learn how to make connections in nature and how to formulate a question about something curious you're seeing. Mm-hmm. All of those kind of skills that hopefully then you take with you in the rest of the garden and on your escapades in other natural spaces.
Well, it's interesting because I was thinking actually as we were talking in the first part of our show about the community engagement and you know, like it is a very scientific approach to designing a new space. These capital projects are extremely scientific and very, the planning period is years, like you were saying, because you really need real hard evidence in order to make good design decisions. You know, it's not just Van Valkenburgh sitting at his drafting table, you know, like with his pencil in hand, whimsically drawing, you know? I mean, there are so many aspects to good design, and I think it shows in this garden, and it's been fascinating to hear about it. And thank you, ladies, for all that you do to help Brooklyn people and kids learn more about their native environment, their natural environment.
I did want to ask you a little bit more about the programming.
Yeah.
You know, and how, you know, specifically the populations that you're serving and, you know, the kind of activities that are available.
Right, because that informs the design.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I'm familiar with it, but, you know, I think it'd be really interesting for our listeners to know more.
So the Discovery Garden is a space for not only families, but now it's large enough that we can also have camp groups and school groups from all across New York City, especially Brooklyn. Our programs for camp and school groups are always free, so they can visit the garden for free and they can come to the Discovery Garden for free and do our drop-in programs that are run by our amazing volunteers. We have 70-plus Discovery docents that we're so lucky to have. They're incredibly inspiring, and they, we just couldn't have the program without our docents, so they're wonderful. And they facilitate hands-on activities throughout the Discovery Garden on the weekdays and on the weekends. And those can range from using science tools, watering the plants, planting in the vegetable beds, learning really specific facts about plants, or just doing a really nice exploration of the plants in the garden. And about the populations that we're serving, we are working on partnering with Cool Culture, NYCHA, Museum Access Consortium to plan special programs to invite in new audiences to the garden. But we're also hoping that it's really open for everyone. We want locals to use it as their backyard, make friends in the Discovery Garden, and hopefully everyone feels welcome in the space.
And honestly, just opening up that south side, the Flatbush Avenue entrance, which had been closed for a while, right? That is just expanding just the convenience, and it sounds so fundamental, but having that bus, you know, being able to get out of that train station and come in, and it changes, you know, just a whole new line of people coming in, like literally just that, you know, whereas before it was, oh, just the north side, you know, it's kind of like, it's just totally enlarged who can
the community
right. that can get in there, you know.
Absolutely. I know it was kind of painful to have to shut that Flatbush entrance down while we reconstructed it, but I think it was just such a wonderful decision in the garden to beautify that southern entrance that just didn't feel quite as special as the other two,
right.
and really welcome all of the communities to the south of the garden with that same kind of inspiring experience as you get coming in the beautiful Eastern Parkway entrance.
Right? Yeah, and it, I mean, it complements what's happening in Prospect Park, and that whole lakeside, you know, design. It's just amazing what's going on here in Brooklyn, and the focus that's being paid to our public spaces and our community cultural institutions. It's just wonderful.
It's great. The Wendy's was like the focus down there in that corner.
You know, I will say that one of the things that our president, Scott Medbury, paid very close attention to throughout the design process was taking a look at all of the vantages from inside the garden and lining up all of the trees that will grow into to block the view of the Wendy's sign from
right.
inside the garden.
Well, that's exactly
what... We pay close attention to that.
I hear you. No, and yeah. that occurred to me because...
That's exactly what I was talking about with that sign. It really is science. And yeah. how many afternoons did Mr. Medbury walk down there and stand and look and think about what tree is going to cover up that big, yes. you know, like
yeah.
that big Wendy's.
The answer is many, many trees yeah. from many different angles.
Exactly.
We can't wait for them to really grow in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good for you guys. It's great to see. And BBG is always an amazing place. I used to be a judge with the Greenest Block of Brooklyn 17, 18 years ago. And Carmen and I have worked closely with BBG for many, many years. So
different
this is,
capacities.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy that you guys took the time today. I know you have so much to do every day, you know, at the garden.
And how many kids go through the day, come through per day? Do you have an idea?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the day, but on like a nice sunny day, we have about 300 to 400 people just in the morning.
Wow.
We don't really have a count for the afternoon, but
right.
I would say about 1,000
wow.
people per day.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. And you're touching them with plants. It's beautiful.
Yeah, you're this is going to be, you know, I have a friend, Alice and I have a mutual friend who began his horticultural journey at BBG as a young man, 10, 11, 12 years old, right? In the children's garden. He went on to get, you know, his master's in horticulture, and he's sort of like my horticultural mentor.
He's been on our show several times.
He's been on our show, and he...
Scott Appel.
Yeah, and you all are basically going to create more people like Scott.
Right.
You know?
That's the dream.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was saying. This is really the next step for the next 100 years. You guys started with children's education, and you're propelling us all into the future. So thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for being
so
on
much.
The show.
And thank you, Carmen, for your service in the garden. We've just learned so much from having you as a volunteer. So
thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. So if you guys want to just shout out like website stuff that you want to share.
Any
with
special events coming up?
Yeah, anything, feel free.
Plug away.
You know?
Great. Yeah, just bbg.org. Check out our family programs. We have lots of stuff coming up in the Discovery Garden and just in the garden as a whole. Chili Pepper Festival is coming up in September. So we'll be doing activities in the Discovery Garden too for that. And also Ghouls and Gourds. For Halloween.
Yeah, and pick up a kid's guide to exploring nature. It makes a perfect companion book to your explorations in the Discovery Garden.
Well, thank you so much. I will probably see you guys tomorrow.
Great. See you tomorrow, Carmen. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
So the show has been written and produced by Carmen DeVito and Alice Krieg and engineered by Jeet. Our engineer. Remember to join our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants, to stay current on our new projects and upcoming shows. And you can also follow us on Twitter at We Dig Plants.
And Instagram. Groundworks Gardens NYC.
Thanks for listening, and see you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.